The Guardian. Earlier this month, I published a story in The Guardian about a radical new approach to treating schizophrenia. The story came from a team of scientists based in London who have discovered intriguing evidence that schizophrenia could be a disease of the immune system. After more than a decade of research, these scientists have just treated their first patient in a clinical trial. But how could disruptions in the immune system lead to the kind of symptoms seen in schizophrenia? And might the immune system play a role in other mental disorders?
The realization that the immune system plays a key role in how our brains function that's come out of neuroscience in the last few years means that now we have a new way of thinking about what might be going on in mental illnesses like schizophrenia.
And so I got a phone call from the basic scientist asking me clinically, do people with Alzheimer's disease get worse if they have an infection? And it's such a common occurrence, so I was immediately able to say, yeah, of course, we see that all the time.
So I think understanding, you know, the role of the immune system across how our brains function normally, but also across a number of different mental illnesses, could help us get a whole new approach to treating these illnesses.
I'm Hannah Devlin. This is Science Weekly.
Hello.
Hi, is that Oliver?
It is.
I started by speaking to one of the scientists who has been pioneering the idea of a link between immune activity and schizophrenia.
I'm Professor Oliver Howes. I'm a psychiatrist and a researcher at King's College London and the MRC London Institute of Medical Sciences.
Oliver is also leading the clinical trial I mentioned, and he started by telling me why the work is so groundbreaking.
This is a completely new way of thinking about schizophrenia. In the past, we've tended to focus on chemical messengers and what's going on at specific proteins, whereas the realization that the immune system plays a key role in how our brains function has come out of neuroscience in the last few years means that now we have a new way of thinking about what might be going on in mental illnesses like schizophrenia. And actually, there's evidence that the immune system in the periphery, so what's going on in our bloods, in the blood in the immune system, can influence the brain and vice versa. So this idea that we've had in the past that somehow there is a divide between the mind and the body really doesn't seem to be the case, and the immune system is a major bridge between the two.
Could you just introduce what the trial is about and the fact that it's just started? You've just treated your first patient.
So we've just started a study that is the first of its kind testing this particular antibody that targets the brain's immune cells, the microglia, in patients with schizophrenia. And just last week we recruited and started the treatment in our first patient with schizophrenia. And this is using a medication that's already used for a condition called multiple sclerosis, which is a condition that affects the connections, the wiring between nerve cells. But we're using the medication because we think it will also target something that seems to be faulty in people with schizophrenia, which are the actual connections between individual nerve cells, which seem to be altered in schizophrenia, and this involves the immune system, which is where we think this drug will work.
Oliver, you've been studying schizophrenia for quite some years now. Could you just tell us a bit about what we know about what happens in the brain when someone is developing schizophrenia and starts having symptoms?
So schizophrenia is a very common mental illness, affects about 1 in 100 people. So actually, most of us will probably know someone that is affected by it, either directly or through a family member. And what we know about it is that it is highly heritable. So that means that it runs in families and there's a strong genetic component, but also that it involves environmental factors as well. So that things like stress in the environment, and using some drugs, substances like cannabis, also increase your risk. What's also become apparent in the last few decades is that there are a number of changes in the brain that start quite early, perhaps 3 or 4 years before the full-blown episode of the first episode of schizophrenia is apparent to doctors. And these changes start off with, in terms of the brain, as relatively small, subtle changes in the structure of the brain and in the function of the brain. So people who are at risk of developing schizophrenia and are slowly, and those that go on to develop it, show reductions and loss in nerve cells, not in the actual cells, but we think it's in the connections between the cells. And this is seen on MRI scans of the brains. This loss gradually increases during the lead up to that first full-blown episode of schizophrenia and carries on during the illness as well. And at the same time, you also see changes in the way the brain is coordinated, because we think of this of the loss of connections between nerve cells. So the brain is no longer functioning as efficiently, and you see that in terms of the way the brain responds when it's thinking or planning activities. And pretty reliably you see those sorts of changes, as I said, even before the development of the full-blown illness, but they gradually increase as the illness develops. And then finally, the thing that seems to be the final change that leads to some of the most dramatic symptoms of schizophrenia that are usually why someone comes to see their doctor, that is the psychotic symptoms, seems to be driven by a change in a chemical messenger called dopamine, which we all have and is involved in our brains normally in a bit like a teaching signal. The dopamine nerve cells are firing to tell us, you know, pay attention, something important's happening. But in people with schizophrenia, the dopamine system seems to be overactive and is firing at the wrong time and too much. So the people with schizophrenia are getting this message from their dopamine system all the time saying, pay attention, look out. And of course, if your teaching signal is doing this at the wrong time, it's a very confusing experience, but also people try and make sense of it. And that's what we think leads to the psychotic symptoms. These are the sorts of symptoms that people with schizophrenia experience, where they often come up with ideas about the world having changed, paranoid ideas that people are doing things behind their backs, which seem very bizarre perhaps when you talk to them, but if you understand what's going on in their brains and that this dopamine teaching signal is disrupted, actually you can see where that's come from.
While covering this story, I met up with the first patient to take part in the trial, a 33-year-old man called Leopold. He told me that before he started medication, he'd feel like the television was talking to him, that it was sending him hidden messages.
Sent out for him.
The traditional drugs that he's been taking mean that these psychotic episodes are now under control. But Leopold told me that he still doesn't feel completely himself, and that he finds it harder to concentrate and to motivate himself to do the kinds of things he enjoyed before being diagnosed.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting.
When I spoke to Leopold's psychiatrist, he also told me that it's often these so-called negative symptoms, lack of motivation, difficulty concentrating, and also cognitive symptoms, people finding it harder to remember and to learn, that patients find the most disabling, even though this side of schizophrenia isn't talked about so much.
Because there's obviously issues with that.
With all this in mind, I wanted to know Oliver's views on current treatments.
Yes, so our current treatments all work by blocking the dopamine system. So they all block the proteins in our brain that the dopamine binds to pass on its chemical message. And of course, as I've told you, that the dopamine system seems to be overactive in schizophrenia, so blocking it seems like a logical thing. But unfortunately, the way these drugs do it is they don't let any normal dopamine signaling to get through, or very little normal dopamine signaling to get through. So it blocks what might be leading to the symptoms, but it also blocks what we all need for our normal brain function. Because as I said, this is part of our brain's teaching signal, and dopamine also has other roles. It's involved in control of our movements as well, and it has roles in emotion and reward processing as well. So by blocking dopamine, these drugs are blocking all these other things as well. And whilst that's effective for the psychosis, that means that these drugs can have side effects, and generally people don't like taking them long term. But unfortunately, because all they're doing is targeting this sort of downstream end result of things that are happening elsewhere in the brain, they're not actually correcting the system. They're just blocking it, so that people have, what we know is that people have to keep taking the medications to stay well. But of course, that means living with side effects sometimes, and taking a medication day in, day out.
Oliver, you mentioned that there seems to be this abnormality in connections between neurons being lost. And as far as I understand, connections between brain cells are something that are constantly being formed and lost in the normal brain. So could you just tell me a bit about why this is going wrong in schizophrenia? Why suddenly all these connections are being lost in an abnormal way?
I think one of the most fascinating things that's emerged in neuroscience in recent years is that we're all born and develop a huge number of connections between our nerve cells. And during childhood and early adulthood, these get refined. And that refinement is really key to our brains working at their most efficient. And that refinement means removing the nerve connections that are no longer needed, the ones that are redundant, so that and then really allowing the brain to strengthen the ones that are needed. But in schizophrenia, what we think is that process is disrupted, and you get excess loss of those connections, and also that you get loss of the good connections, if you like, so that instead of just the brain just removing the ones that are redundant, you're also getting useful connections being pruned. And this actually involves the immune system, because the brain's main immune cell, which is called microglia, they are involved in eating, if you like, these redundant connections. And in schizophrenia, there is evidence that the microglia are overactive, and we think that means that they are eating the useful connections between nerve cells as well, and this is causing excess loss of nerve cells.
So the hope is that by targeting the activity of these microglia in the brain, Oliver and his team might be able to come up with a new therapeutic approach.
So interesting.
This approach would potentially target the root cause of schizophrenia, rather than simply dampening down the symptoms.
And using a brain technique, brain imaging technique called PET, we were able to measure levels of a protein that microglia secrete as they become more and more active. And when we did these studies in people with schizophrenia, we found that this marker was increased. And then we also did a study published last year that looked at the measure that this marker of microglia in people at high risk of developing schizophrenia in the year or two before they might develop the full-blown illness, and we showed that this marker of microglia was increased in those people as well. This is evidence that something's going on really right from the onset of the illness.
And after this short break, we'll hear more from Oliver about the drug that is being used in the trial.
We were able to use this antibody to target a protein that's on microglia, that microglia use to move around the brain.
We'll also ask whether similar approaches could be used for other disorders of the brain.
What we're able to do in addition was to look at peripheral blood markers of inflammation to see what sort of signals were associated with that decline. And one of the big markers that came up for us, although there are others, but one of the big markers that came up was this protein called TNF-alpha.
We'll be right back. Before we kick off again, I wanted to point you in the direction of another podcast here at The Guardian. It's called Brexit Means, and as the name would suggest, attempts to finally find out what exactly Brexit does mean. Apart from, of course, Brexit. So if you feel like delving into the nitty-gritty of Britain's exit from the EU, make sure to join John Henley and his experts on The Guardian's Brexit Means. To find out more, head over to theguardian.com/podcasts or search Brexit Means on your favourite podcast app. Welcome back to Science Weekly. I'm Hannah Devlin. Before the break, we heard from Oliver Howes about the role that the immune system may play in the onset of schizophrenia. We also heard about a new trial led by Oliver, in which patients will take a monthly dose of an antibody drug.
What's the logic behind the new drug?
I asked Oliver about the effects of this drug.
So the new drug that we're using is a drug that is an antibody. And antibodies are what our immune systems use to target things like germs that try and invade our bodies, but also other proteins, and they're very specific. So we're able to use this antibody to target a protein that's on microglia, that microglia use to move around the brain. And it's also used by the immune cells that are the equivalents of microglia in our blood, and these immune cells can cross into the brain and where they become microglia and contribute to these microglial changes that we've been talking about in schizophrenia. So this drug, this medication, will, what we hope, is reduce the accumulation of microglia in the brain, and in particular parts of the brain where we think most of these changes are happening. And in this way, it will, we hope, prevent some of these very early changes in the connections between nerve cells that we think are the first signs of brain changes that lead to schizophrenia.
Hello.
Hi again, Clive. That's a lot better.
If schizophrenia is proven to be driven in part by changes in the immune system, this would overturn centuries of dogma about the separation between mind and body. Scientists studying other brain disorders have also begun challenging this traditional view.
So is that okay? That sort of...
This is Clive Holmes,
Professor of Biological Psychiatry from the University of Southampton.
Clive has uncovered new evidence about the role the immune system might play in Alzheimer's disease. I spoke to him down the line recently, and he started by telling me what prompted his interest.
My initial interest in this really came from animal studies, in fact, where they'd got a mouse with a sort of form of neurodegenerative disease, not actually Alzheimer's, but a form of neurodegenerative disease. And what they found was if they gave that mice the outside bacterial coat called lipopolysaccharide, if they injected that mouse, that peripherally, so just into the blood, these mice did really badly in terms of their memory function. They deteriorated much more rapidly than you had expected them to have done. And interestingly, they showed inflammation in the brain. So the sort of stuff that these inflammatory cells produce was produced even more. And later on, they actually showed that these mice's brain cells were dying more rapidly. So just because of this simple infection with the outside coat of a bacteria. And so I got a phone call from the basic scientist asking me clinically, do people with Alzheimer's disease get worse if they have an infection. And it's such a common occurrence, so I was immediately able to say, yeah, of course, we see that all the time. People have urinary tract infections and things like that with Alzheimer's. They get worse and never really recover. And the question was, well, okay, well, where is it published? And I assumed it had been published because it was basically, everyone seemed to know this. But of course, there's no actual evidence out there. So we did a study supported by the Alzheimer's Society where we followed 300 people with Alzheimer's disease and checked them for very carefully for infections and any inflammatory signals in the blood. And what we found was, sure enough, people who had very simple infections, urinary tract infections, chest infections, they were deteriorating much more rapidly than people without those infections. And what we're actually also able to show was it wasn't just infections that did this. It was any sort of even low-grade chronic inflammatory disease would do the same thing. So that people with infections were doubling their rate of decline. People with these chronic inflammatory conditions were actually quadrupling their rate of decline. And what we were able to do in addition was to look at peripheral blood markers of inflammation to see what sort of signals were associated with that decline. And one of the big markers that came up for us, although there are others, but one of the big markers that came up was this protein called TNF-alpha.
Essentially, TNF-alpha is a signalling molecule in the blood that triggers immune activity. In the body, this activity can help fight off infection. But recent research suggests that in Alzheimer's, this activity may accelerate the rate at which neurons are killed off.
So how do these inflammatory...
Something I wanted to know was how immune cells might have an effect in the brain, especially when one considers what's known as the blood-brain barrier.
Well, that's part of the question, really. One possibility is that they actually stimulate the vagus nerve. A lot of our peripheral organs are innervated by this nerve, which comes from the brain and goes outwards and controls a lot of our bodily organs, such as our heart and also our gastrointestinal tract, etc. And so most of the body is actually connected peripherally through this nerve because it controls your autonomic function, basically. And that thought is thought to potentially be a mediator for these cytokines, which the vagus nerve seems to have receptors for these cytokines. And it may be that actually then sends a neural transmitter signal to the brain directly to say, look, you've got an infection. And so the brain becomes aware there's an infection. Another possibility is there are actually areas of the brain which don't have a blood-brain barrier. And it's possible that these molecules might pass through those areas of the brain. There's possible second mediators. And then the fourth possibility, which people have dismissed for many years, but which people are beginning to question it, is whether or not actually during an infection, the blood-brain barrier is actually starting to break down, and that some of these inflammatory cells can get into the brain directly.
So we're not sure exactly what the kind of mediation is between the two, but have you kind of followed up on that study in Alzheimer's and have you discovered anything else about what might be happening?
Well, what we thought would be a good idea at the moment, of course, at the beginning, we only had the possibility of a relationship between this cytokine, TNF-alpha, and worsening of cognitive decline in people with Alzheimer's. So we thought what would be an obvious thing to do, if we could do it, would be to block that signal using drugs. And if we could block that signal, and if that signal actually did have a detrimental effect on cognitive decline, in theory, it should slow down the worsening of Alzheimer's and maybe even improve on some of the sickness behaviours that we've talked about. So we actually did do a randomised placebo-controlled trial of a drug called etanercept, which is a TNF-alpha blocker used currently for conditions like rheumatoid arthritis and ankylosing spondylitis. And we did a small study of just about 40 people, 20 people on the drug, 20 people off the drug with Alzheimer's, and over a six-month period. And that study has been published and shows evidence that actually does seem to slow down progression. It's a small study, so it's too small to be, to warrant treatment using that drug. But it does point that in the direction that this might actually have some legs, if you like, scientifically. So we would be keen to pursue that further.
It feels as though evidence is converging from many different areas of research, all pointing to an important link between the immune system
and mental health.
Yes, it's
Oliver Howes again.
Become a very exciting area in mental health care generally. Depression is probably the other leading area where the immune system seems to play a major role. And again, in people with depression, at least some of them, the immune system seems to be overactive, and that's often linked to poor response to treatment. So I think understanding, you know, the role of the immune system across how our brains function normally, but also across a number of different mental illnesses, could help us get a whole new approach to treating these illnesses.
You mentioned that in the past, it's often been thought that the brain was completely separate from the body and from the immune system as well. And it seems as though there's been a bit of a shift in that. Do you think that having this sort of mind-body divide has, I don't know, sort of prejudiced people who've been researching mental health against, you know, what might be the root causes of some of the illnesses?
I think you're right that sometimes there's a tendency for people to just think of things as, oh, this is all in the mind, or, oh, this is a physical problem, so then it's more important. But actually, my patients, when they're telling me about what they're going through, these symptoms are incredibly distressing and disabling. I've had patients say to me that if you imagine these voices constantly talking to you, commenting on you, making negative comments, it really drives them to despair sometimes. And I've had people say to me, this is like having my arm sawed off 24/7. And I think actually, sometimes people also think because something is expressed as a psychological symptom that it's also somehow under someone's control. And actually, by understanding the brain mechanisms and also that this involves the whole body, we'll get a better understanding of not only how to treat it, but also of the illness. And hopefully that will help address some of that prejudice and stigma that people with schizophrenia face still to this day.
Special thanks this week to Oliver Howes and Clive Holmes. If you want to find out more, we'll include a link to my recent news article on this subject in the episode's description on the Guardian website. If you've got any questions, queries or feedback, please get in touch via our email address, scienceweekly@theguardian.com. I'm Hannah Devlin. This is Science Weekly.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.